Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, September 8th, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Hello, cowboy. What's your name?
Why, I'm your host, ma'am. That savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I have a remarkable show in store for you. Today, we inaugurate a brand new series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. Thanks to all the amazing feedback I got after my interview with Samantha and Jordan over at Oysters and Chocolate, I realized that y'all have a powerful hunger for all things erotic. So, I thought to myself, how can I satisfy these desires? That's when I came up with the idea to do a series of interviews with noted erotic artists. I want to see if we can uncover something of the creative process in this specialized art form. In this series, we will be hearing from all kinds of artists who use several different media. To kick off our new series, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to a world-class artist who creates her erotica using the medium of words, KJB. Kay's first book of erotica, The Collector, was published just last month. This comes on the heels of 7 previous publications featuring her work, as well as 3 upcoming volumes to be published later this year and in early 2009. Stick around, folks, for this enormously entertaining, yet also informative chat with one of the brightest stars in the erotic firmament. Today's podcast is appropriately brought to you by one of my favorite sponsors, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish gear right there at the top of drdickssexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab.
You have a point. An idiotic one, but a point.
Why, thank you. I guess. You'll enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes, siree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty sex toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts and unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Kay, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm delighted that we could make this time to be together. I'm honored to be in such illustrious company, don't you know? Would you like to say hello to the nice people? They're all dying to meet you.
Okay. Hi, nice people.
So, as you know, you are my very first guest in a new series of interviews that I'm doing called The Erotic Mind. All this came about when I realized the great interest my audience has in erotica, and we can thank Samantha and Jordan over at Oysters and Chocolate for that, don't you know? When I asked them where they thought I should begin this exploration of the mind erotic, they were both convinced I ought to begin with you. Pretty high praise, I would say. What do you have to say for yourself, ma'am?
Well, yeah, I mean, Sam and Jordan are absolutely fantastic. I mean, they run a brilliant site. And, it's just fantastic. I mean, I've been with them basically from the start, and it has grown and changed and improved almost daily since the beginning. Bless them. I don't know. I don't know really why they sort of promoted me. It's very. I mean, they've got some brilliant authors on there, and I'm hoping that they'll maybe send some others your way because I'm sure many of them would be worth talking to.
They're delightful people.
They are
in their own right.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of I suppose becoming friends as well as colleagues, really, and they are lovely to chat to.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment.
Oh, that's very reckless of you.
Listen, talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better.
Yeah, yeah, whenever you like, whenever you like.
Okay. And you just jump in there as you see fit. So let's begin at the beginning. KJB is your nom de guerre, or nom de erotica, as it might be.
That's right. Yeah.
So I understand that your real name is Betty Windsor. So I gather that you, because of your exalted position, a pseudonym is a must, right?
Oh, well, naturally, when one is saddled with a name like that, one must do one's best to live it down.
Are you not amused?
Oh, gosh. Surely, sir, no. Yeah, Betty Windsor. Wouldn't that be just a name?
Wouldn't that be grand?
I mean, in fact, that would be a pseudonym of itself, would it not?
Yes. I mean, when you're born with that, I mean, why change it? It could be a great porn name. Betty Windsor.
It is a porn name. Either that or none. I'm not sure.
When I lived in San Francisco many years ago and Queen Elizabeth visited the city, the drag queens all had a Betty Windsor lookalike contest.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. They would be treasonably hung over here for that.
They were hung in San Francisco.
Well hung anyway. Yeah, okay. I see where you're going.
Do many people in your life know of this alternate life of yours?
No. My family know. My husband, obviously. My very best friends, a select gathering of which. And that's it, really.
It's hard to keep such a secret, it would seem to me.
Yeah, it is difficult, and I am slowly losing that veil, as
look,
it were.
Mom, look what I've written. Look at my new book, Mom.
It is difficult to keep it quiet, and sometimes it's quite frustrating because, you know, people say, what do you do for a living? And I say, oh, I write. And so they say, what do you write? And I trot out the I write for an internet company line. So they're all thinking I'm like, you know, reviewing vacuum cleaners or something, which I am very much not.
Well, we'll get to more of what's behind your pseudonym in a bit, but right now I want to share with our audience your accomplishments as an authoress. Your own book of erotica, The Collector, was published just last month, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Wow. Yeah, 4th of August.
Wow. That must have been very exciting for you.
Oh, incredible. I'm still in shock, to be honest. I've got a box of preview copies upstairs, and I keep going to have a quick look just to make sure that, you know, I haven't hallucinated the whole thing.
Uh-huh. I don't know about you, but being published would make all my naughty parts all tingly.
Oh, God, I mean, why do we do it otherwise? It's certainly not for the money, is it?
Uh-huh. No, God knows. Holy cow. So the publication of your own book comes on the heels of 7 previous publications featuring your work, as well as 3 upcoming volumes featuring your work, to be published later this year and in 2009.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there are all the numerous web publications, mostly on oysters
and chocolates. Yeah.
When do you find time to sleep, darling?
When do you sleep? You're always awake. I have never known somebody always online. It's
scandalous, isn't it? I mean, I have no life, and
this is the same with me. You see, I mean, this is how it. But no, to be honest, I only work on the erotica for a few hours every day. I sit every morning in the local coffee shop with my notebook and pen.
Ah, so it's longhand.
I write everything longhand.
No,
I can't work into the computer.
Get out.
Yeah, so 2 hours every morning over coffee and bun in local caf. I dare say the locals think I'm probably studying for something. I don't know. and then I come home and I type up what I've done and I edit as I type.
I see.
So it's like an editing process. And then in the afternoon I do my real job. Mm. So
Queen of England.
It is Queen of England, yes, seen in newspapers near you.
I see. Well, as you know, the initial reason for doing this series was to uncover something of the creative process.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Since I'm assuming that you are not living the life of a full-time sexual athlete, what sparks the images that come in a story or poem?
To be honest, it's usually extremely mundane things. I mean, 9 times out of 10 with me, it's a location that sets me off.
Mm-hmm. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's always a real place with me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, every story that I've written, the location is probably the only genuine thing in it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't picture the location, it doesn't work. I can't get the atmosphere, the feel of the place over.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't got the atmosphere of the place, then your story's flat before
mm-hmm.
you've started.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, maybe an object, you know, stray wooden spoon,
uh-huh.
hairbrush where it shouldn't be, that
uh-huh.
sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
I twist the mundane, if you like.
I see. Would you care to share a juicy tidbit with us?
Well, yes, if you like. I was having trouble choosing because, as you very kindly said, I have a fair bit out there. So I emailed Jordan and said, help, choose something for me. So she suggested I read a little bit from a story called New Territory, which is in The Collector. I shall just read a small snippet.
Great.
To get the juices going. It's about the lead character, I should say, of the book goes around Britain collecting erotic stories.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, she has decided that she should be taking her work home with her. And so she has persuaded this man that she's met in the cafe to come and be a research project for her. So we'll kick off where she has got him back to her house. Okay? He hadn't got as far as making small talk. In fact, he hadn't even got as far as attempting to make small talk when she took him by the hand and led him into the small living room and placed him on the sofa. She knelt and, placing a restraining hand on his leg and his shoes, and placed them neatly to one side. Then she did the same with his socks. That was when his body stopped making his hands clammy and his heart beat faster and sent all excess blood directly to his dick. He'd known he'd been halfway to a hard-on already, but now there was no disguising the fact. You would be a Coldplay man, or maybe Dido. She stood by the tiny stereo. Dido. She nodded, pressed buttons, and waited as the haunting notes built up to the opening number. He should do something. He tried to stand, but she just raised her hand and he quickly sat down again. Maybe this wasn't his show. This was new territory. She was standing about 2 meters away from him. Her jacket had already hit the floor, and he caught his breath as he watched her long slim fingers begin to undo the buttons of her white blouse. She looked straight at him the whole time, each movement in time to the music, and he found himself wishing that he'd chosen something with a faster pace. His throat felt dry as she revealed a beautiful cream bra. He could see her nipples, hard and dark, pressing against the thin lace. He started to wonder how wet she would be, and then he stopped himself. If he started to think like that, he'd shoot his load before he even got his trousers off. He'd never felt so unsure of himself as she stepped out of her suede shirt, and let it drop over her boots. The room was charged with electricity, so enticing, so dangerous. She moved forward and gestured for him to stand. He hadn't been able to suppress the groan as he stood. His stomach felt strange and his dick ached to be freed from its confinement. He waited, doing nothing. He didn't know what to do, so he let her take control. Keep control. She took his belt first, pulling it out very slowly, loop by loop. She slid the brown leather between her fingers. I like belts. That was all she said, but he suddenly realized that he wanted to hit her with it. He needed to yank down her knickers and punish her for being perfect. She undid his shirt next. His arms hung against his sides. He wanted to touch so badly, but he sensed that that would screw things up. This ritual, so painfully slow, was possibly the most erotic thing he'd ever seen. When she kissed his nipples, he yelled. It was like someone placing an ice cube down his front on a scalding day, wonderful but totally agonizing. Her mouth worked its way slowly across his tan chest. His hands automatically went to hold her face, but she took hold of them and kept them firmly by his sides, whilst her teeth began to graze the skin above his jeans waistband. He'd read about women that could undo jeans flies with their teeth, but he'd dismissed it as pornographic fantasy. It appeared he was wrong. He took a very hard tug of his jeans, however, to get them down. His cock had swollen so much that it was now stuck with its shiny red head sticking out the top of his briefs. He'd never forget that moment. It was the first time he saw a smile, and he flushed with embarrassment at his obvious need for her body. "Oh, don't worry," she said. "I think he looks gorgeous." And with that she yanked off his underwear and stared with sheer lust, admiring him standing to attention before her. Never had he felt so utterly naked or so totally observed. Her eyes flicked to the small table by the sofa. A condom sat waiting. He nodded in silent understanding, hope flooding through him. She began to quiver then. Perhaps she was real after all, and not some incredible apparition with ironclad self-control. He watched, amazed, as she came in front of him, without a single finger being laid on her. Power. She'd made him want her, and that alone had got her off. It hadn't ended. He feared for a split second that that might have been enough for her, that his services would no longer be required. But her hands came up to him now, and she pulled him close to her. In a quiet whisper, she said, "I seem to have been rather naughty." She glanced at the belt. "I wonder if you'd mind administering the punishment I am so obviously due." And the story goes on from there.
Yikes! Yikes!
Yeah, buy the book.
Holy cow. Holy cow. There's nothing, you know, I'm a terribly dyslexic fellow, so reading has always been a challenge for me.
Uh-huh,
and ever
uh-huh.
since I was a little kid, being read to has just been wonderful, excruciatingly wonderful. And
yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
And listening to erotica is absolutely the best. I mean, I as you know, I produce my own small line of pornography, gay themed pornography, and that pales in comparison to having someone reading an erotic story.
I mean, your own mind can work. You can fill in the picture in your head, and I mean, that's always going to be more effective, isn't it?
Yes. One of the things that, you know, as you were reading, I was listening for the words for I wanted to see if there was something that was really triggering for me, and I noticed colors: white blouse, brown belt. Now a blouse would be fine, you know. A skirt is fine, but a suede skirt is completely different. A white blouse is completely different than a blouse.
Yeah, because you have a picture of a crisp object in your head.
Yes, right. And it suggests something. I mean, white suggests purity and for good or for worse.
A total contradiction. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. And so the whole idea of control, anticipation, wondering. And this is another thing that I see as a common thread in terms of erotica is this anticipation, this build-up. And that's where I would like to go next. I've heard Violet Blue read one of your stories, and it was blissfully brief, but also very powerful. Much of the erotica that I have read is also amazingly short.
Yeah.
And because of its brevity, every word must count.
Yeah.
So how do you build that tension, so to speak, in such a petite work of art?
Well, the main thing is to get across how something feels, or more important still, the anticipation of how you think the act is going to go. You know, you build up a picture, the sweaty palms, the dry throat. You almost have to try and make the reader experience those for themselves with the character, which it's difficult to explain how we do that. I mean, the very brevity of the thing means you're sort of forced to condense all the feelings quite quickly. I have struggled over answering this one. It's this. I mean, you build the tension by getting across, I don't know, how the nerves all link together.
Well, I mean, that in itself is remarkable to me, because, I mean, as a sex therapist, one of the things that I notice about people and their sexuality is that they're not paying all that much attention. You know, I mean, I've got a hard on or I'm wet, And then yeah, that ends right
nothing.
There. Yeah, and
yeah, that says nothing. But to
they're
me,
not paying attention to their breathing. They're not paying attention to, you know, the building tension, the rippling of, you know, nerves and all the things that you identified there. So it seems to me that the effective author of erotica needs to be particularly attuned to, you know, body physical responses to sensation.
Exactly. I mean, one of the, I suppose, the most obvious from a female perspective would be, say, the description of how if your nipples were being licked, you feel it between your legs more than you do on your breasts. And you need to explain that in different ways, depending on the story.
And that's what's so fascinating, it seems to me, because you have to be inside both the male body and the female body, at least in terms of this story. You have to know what it feels like to, you know, have an erection. You have to know what it feels like, you know, to lubricate. Yeah. That's pretty amazing. I mean, one is less amazing than the other, but both together.
Yeah, one you'd hope that you'd find out. Yeah, I don't quite know. I mean, this is one of the things that my male friends that do know what I do for a living don't get, is how I can explain how they are responding when obviously I can't possibly have ever experienced that for myself.
Right.
I don't know. My brain scares me. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just somehow.
So you know, you don't really chat with others, particularly the male other, and say, you know, what do you feel? What is it like?
I imagine.
Never.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty spot on, would you not say?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to tell me, honey.
Yes, well, absolutely, darling. I think it's pretty spot on. Absolutely.
That's good. Yes. No, I've never asked. But no one's ever said I've got it wrong so far, so fine. Maybe I should. I don't know.
Well, you know, it would be interesting. I mean, if nothing else, it's a great conversation starter, because I have, like I said earlier, I have a sense that most people are not that attuned. They know they know when their hormones are raging, and they know that, you know, when there's a sexual urgency. They know, you know, when there's a peak moment, but everything else is a wash in between, and, you know, there's a jumble. And sometimes people are so concerned about the externals, you know, how do I look, how do I smell, is my hair, you know, proper, is my fat showing? Is my dick too small? Are my tits too little? You know, all of this kind of stuff is getting in the way and short-circuiting all this enormous pleasure that, you know, could be funneling in their direction if they just rode the wave instead of blocked it.
Yeah, they're sort of losing out there, I think.
I think so, too. And I think that's one of the really remarkable things about erotica, is that it can attune us to that. You know, if we read it more frequently or it became more part of our life, perhaps we would be more attuned to that sort of thing in our own bodies. I don't know, but, you know.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Do you ever look over a draft of your story and say, gee, I really need to make it dirtier, or maybe even less smutty?
No, I tend to, not so far, let's put it that way. I tend to go straight in with the dirty and stay there. I don't tend to do the sort of the milder stuff, as you will have known if you've read it. I did recently have to increase the length of a story. Oysters and Chocolate, as you know, are having an anthology come out soon.
Yes.
And suddenly an extra 500 words was needed per story to satisfy the publisher. And the girl said, you know, make it even dirtier. And I'm like, okay. So I just added root vegetables.
Such a permission.
Yeah. The addition of root vegetables did the job.
Ah.
So there you go. But I've never had to calm one down yet. But I guess I would just, just change the terminology. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there pet words that you use that, you know, to kind of pump things up, like I'm assuming you don't use penis, you would use cock.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do tend to stick to the, I suppose you call them, the slang words.
Uh-huh.
Cock, dick, cunt, pussy,
uh-huh,
that area. I mean, to calm something down, you would go penis, vagina.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine. And sometimes, just for a change, because I mean, there's only so many times you can use the word dick, mm-hmm, in one story. Mm-hmm. I mean, before you think, oh my goodness, I've used that in every paragraph. You know, we need to change this.
Yeah.
You know, because there's nothing worse than constant repetition.
Yeah.
Especially in this sort of story.
One time over the holidays, last Christmas holiday, I was with a group of friends and we sat down and tried to come up with as large a list of euphemisms for vaginas and penises, and we came up with an incredible load of them, so to speak.
Oh, well, send me a list.
Yeah, I should send you a list, because you know,
you should.
When I'm writing my column, it's the same kind of thing. I rarely use penis and vagina unless I absolutely have to, because I find them just so clinical and so off-putting. And besides, very few people talk like that. But
no, because people can't.
Yeah.
People like to cut. Yeah, I mean, they feel more embarrassed saying, say, penis than they would to say cock.
I know. And interestingly enough, I hear from, you know, comments from people who visit my site and, you know, call me out on using the vernacular as I do, and they're upset with me and, you know, say, you know, if you were truly the professional person that you say that you are, then by all means you would be using more professional language. And I said, well, fuck.
Yeah. Nobody would, I mean, you'd the real people that would need help would be turned off by the fact that it was too clinical.
Yes. And, you know, that's what sets, you know, my site apart from a lot of the other professional sites out there.
Mm.
I mean, it just, you know, like, get over it.
And, I mean, obviously, you can go too far. I mean, things like hot rod should be avoided at all costs. I mean, you know, we are not a B movie here. Are you having a small seizure?
I was having a small seizure. I'm having a small seizure. But I will send you that that list of euphemisms, because they're in a podcast from where I say them all out loud, and which is a very funny kind of thing. Interestingly enough, I mean, the one common thing about the male euphemisms were, they're all powerful, like jackhammer and, you know, sword and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, God.
I know. They're very, very, you know, kind of very powerful things. And the euphemisms for vaginas were hostile, almost hostile. And you could tell them, you know, that men were making these up as opposed to women, and it was unpleasant for a lot of them. Unpleasant.
I can believe it, but there you go.
Well, listen, that's all the time we have for today. Is it possible for you to come back next week and join us? I have so many more questions that I would like to ask.
That would be just lovely.
Thank you, my dear.
Okay,
I will see you next week.
Bye.
Jeez, what a great show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for part two of this delectable interview and more sex advice with an edge with your host, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you are looking for in my stockroom, you better just call off the search right now.
I don't want to make trouble. All I want is a drink.
I could go for a tall, cool one myself. But, you know, here at Dr. Dick's Stockroom, no alcohol. But I have put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my monthly, ever so popular sex toy awareness feature. You'll find a link to this amazing resource in the category section in the sidebar of my site. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Before we conclude, I would like to remind you of the toll-free lickety-split sex advice podcast voicemail hotline at 866-422-5680. Got a question or comment? Want to rant or rave? Or perhaps you just need to talk dirty for a minute or two. Hey, why not get it off your chest and give Dr. Dick a call at 866-422-5680. It's free.
All I know is that kid sister of mine came back here again last night, and nobody's seen her since.
Was that your sister? I had no idea. Listen, be sure to look for Dr. Dick's podcast on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Ah, why, that's even better. Over and out.